Hi, welcome back to the E-commerce Paradise podcast. This is Juliana, your host, and in this episode, I want to talk to you about the 7 habits of highly effective people. So this book by Stephen Covey is a really great book, and I highly suggest you read it if you're an entrepreneur. So we want to be effective in our business, and not just our business, but our life as entrepreneurs. So the 7 habits of highly effective people is something that you can apply to in everyday life. The first one of the 7 habits of highly effective people, and I try to apply this on a daily basis, and what I noticed is that right now what I'm doing is I'm doing Monday through Friday, I'm putting my work in, and then on the weekends I'm taking it off. So I'm giving myself the 7 habits of highly effective people during the week for work, and then on the weekend I'm doing that for my personal life and things that I want to do on the weekends. So number one is to be proactive. So what does being proactive means? It just means that you're in charge. As an entrepreneur, maybe you have a job or maybe you don't, but it just means that you're in charge and we get to choose the scripts of our lives. We use this self-awareness to be proactive and take responsibility for our choices. So you're not blaming anybody else for what happens in your life. You're taking charge and you're saying, this is what I'm going to do and this is who I'm going to be on a daily basis. So the first habit that he discusses is being proactive, and what distinguishes us as humans from all other animals is our inherent ability to examine our own character, to decide how we view ourselves in our situations, and to control our own effectiveness. So simply put, in order to be effective, you have to be proactive. So reactive people, which is the other side, the opposite, are people that take a passive stance at life. They believe that the world is happening to them instead of them taking charge, taking the bull by the horns, as they say. They see reactive people will say things like, there's nothing I can do. That's just the way I am. I'm just like that. Instead of saying, okay, like, let me try to improve on that. And we all do this every once in a while. One thing, and that's okay, you know, these are habits that you build over a lifetime, right? So it's habits. And you have to build up that habit, just like working out, going to the gym, any kind of physical exercise. You have to build that habit. And at first, you're not great. So one thing that I do sometimes is say, okay, I'm not good at math. I'm just not. But I could take that and say, okay, I'm going to work on that and try to be better at math. So they think the problem is out there, but that thought is the problem. So they think it's outside of themselves, and they think that, you know, they don't have really control over their own destiny. This reactivity becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and reactive people feel increasingly victimized and out of control. So you can think that bad things just happen to me. That's just fate. That's just how life is. But in reality, if you took the steps, if you were proactive instead of reactive, if you worked on something that you really, really cared about and loved, or if you, you know, went and applied for a bunch of jobs, you know, if you're looking for a job instead of just one job, you are going to get somewhere better instead of saying, oh, there's nothing out there. You know, I applied to all these places and nobody called me back. Well, why don't you call them? Why don't you get on the phone and say, hey, I did an interview with you. You know, what's up? What's going on with my, you know, am I hired? Can I come in for a second interview? Like, just want to know. When my sister was actually getting when she was going into her I'll just tell you a really quick story. When she was going into senior year, we told her she had to join a team or she had to get a job going into her senior year because it was summertime and she was just hanging out. And we wanted her to be proactive. So we said either get a job or join a team. And she chose a job because she liked money. And so she applied to a bunch of different places. And, you know, we kept pushing her and pushing her and like, and, you know, to apply online at places. And then she ended up being proactive and actually found this app on in iTunes that actually, she only has to put in her, all her information once. And then all she has to do is say which places she wants to apply for. And then it will automatically send all her information that she filled out once. So she doesn't have to reapply every time and fill out those forms. So she was proactive about it. And then when they finally, when she went on an interview, I think it was like the first place she went to, I can't even remember taking her anywhere else. She went to the interview at Jamba Juice and, they, didn't call her back. And, so we were like, okay, so you need to call, you got to call. And this was a new habit for me too, because I had never done that as either. And so we were like, okay, call. And she was calling the places back. And I think she might have applied to more places than Jamba Juice. But anyways, but eventually she got a job. And she, because she was proactive and she got a really, she got a job that she liked at the mall, at Jamba Juice. She really liked it there. And that was all on her being proactive and applying to all these different places, and finding that app on her phone. And she got it pretty quickly. It was within a couple weeks that she got a job, and that was her first one. So that's one good way of being proactive in your life. So proactive people, they recognize that they have a responsibility or a response ability. Two words, response dash ability. So they have the ability to respond. And Covey defines this as the ability to choose how you will respond to any given stimuli or situation. All right, so it is our willing permission, our consent to what happens to us. That hurts us far more than what happened to us in the first place. So it's our willing permission, our consent to what happens to us that hurts us far more than what happened to us in the first place. In order to be proactive, we must focus on the circle of influence that lies within our circle of concern. In other words, we must work on the things we can do something about. So, you know, there's a really good quote that my stepmom used to have. She was in AA and NA, and a really good quote that I remember seeing in her room. I don't know what the whole quote is, but it was a, you know, it was a Bible quote or like a, you know, something from Christianity. But one of the things that they said was, help me to recognize the difference between things I can change and the things I cannot change. So that is what he's talking about here. So proactive focus, positive energy, it enlarges the circle of influence. So the more you focus your positive energy on the things that you can change, the more your circle of influence, the more you'll be able to change things over time because you'll get more opportunities, right? And the reactive focus is negative energy. It reduces your circle of influence. So the more negative you are, the more you say, it's not, you know, it's just how things are. You are cutting yourself off from that opportunity if you had been proactive. Okay. So the positive energy we exert will cause our circle of influence to expand, like I said. Reactive people, on the other hand, focus on things that are in their circle of concern, but not in their circle of influence. So they think about things that they care about, which leads to blaming external factors, so things they can't change. So like if you're at work or something like that and you have really sucky coworkers, there's really nothing you can do about it. You just have to focus on your job or your task at hand, maybe get some headphones and just ignore them, you know, do whatever you need to do to do what you need to do, and just ignore that. Emanating negative energy, so it leads to blaming, external factors emanating negative energy and causing their circle of influence to shrink. Okay, so the way you can practice this is challenge yourself to test the principle of proactivity by doing the following. One, start replacing reactive language with proactive language. So reactive equals he makes me so sad. Proactive is I control my own feelings. And this is great stuff, you guys. This is good. Two, convert reactive tasks into proactive ones. All right, so habit number two is, so we went over habit one. Habit number two is begin with the end in mind. So start with a clear destination in mind. Covey says that we can use our imagination to develop a vision of what we want to become and use our conscience to decide what values will guide us. Most of us find it rather easy to busy ourselves. We work hard to achieve victories, promotions, a higher income, more recognition, but we don't often stop to evaluate the meaning behind this busyness, behind these victories. We don't ask ourselves if these things that we focus on so intently are what really matter to us. So habit two suggests that in everything we do, we should begin with the end in mind. Start with a clear destination. That way we can make sure the steps we're taking are in the right direction. So get some clarity. Think about what you want out of life. What do you want out of your business? Out of this entrepreneurial journey, what are your goals? Write them down on a piece of paper and say what you want. Do you want to travel? Do you want to, provide more for your kids? Do you want to have time at home with your kids? Do you want to get a bigger house? Do you want to quit your job? What is it that drives you to do your business? And you can do these for your personal life too. You know, what are your goals in your relationships that you have? Focus on those end goals, and then you'll be able to have, you'll know the next steps that you need to take. It's incredibly easy to get caught up in an activity trap. So what he's saying here is like just doing busy work to be busy and makes, you know, it makes you feel like you're doing stuff, but you're really not. In the busyness of life, to work harder and harder at climbing the ladder of success, only discover it's leaning against the wrong wall. So you're working towards something, and working towards something, maybe like your job that you work at, and you're getting good promotions, and you know, at the end of the road or halfway up that ladder, you realize I'm on the wrong wall. So Covey emphasizes that our self-awareness empowers us to shape our own lives instead of living our lives by default or based on the standards or preferences of others. Beginning with the end in mind is extremely important for businesses. Being a manager is about optimizing for efficiency, but being a leader is about setting the right strategic vision for your organization in the first place and asking, what are we trying to accomplish? Before we as individuals or organizations can start setting and achieving goals, we must be able to identify our values. This process may involve some re-scripting to be able to assert our own personal values. Re-scripting, Covey explains, is recognizing ineffective scripts that have been written for you and changing those scripts by proactively writing new ones that are building your own values. It is also important to identify our center. Whatever is at the center of your life will be the source of your security, guidance, wisdom, and power. So you might be spouse-centered. If your feelings of security are based on the way your spouse treats you, your direction comes from your own needs / wants and from those of your spouse. So if you're family-centered, your security is founded on family acceptance and fulfilling family expectations. Your actions are limited by family models and traditions. You might be money-centered. Your personal worth is determined by your net worth. Profit is your decision-making criteria. You might be work-centered. You tend to define yourself by your occupational role. You make your decisions based on the needs and expectations of your work. You might be possession-centered. Your security is based on your reputation, your social status, or the tangible things you possess. You tend to compare what you have to what others have. Or you might be pleasure-centered. You make decisions based on what you view the most pleasure. You see the world in terms of what's in it for you. You might be friend-centered. Your security is a function of a social mirror. You are highly dependent on the opinions of others. You might be enemy-centered. If you make decisions based on what will thwart your enemy, you are defensive, overreactive, and often paranoid. You might be church-centered if your security is based on your church activity and the esteem in which you are held by those in authority or influence in the church. You find identity and security in religious labels and comparisons. You might be self-centered. If your security is constantly changing and shifting, you view the world by how decisions, events, and circumstances will affect you. So our centers affect us fundamentally. They determine our daily decisions, actions, and motivations, as well as our interpretation of events. However, Covey notes that none of these centers are optimal, and that instead we should strive to be principle-centered. We should identify the timeless, unchanging principles by which we must live our lives. This will give us the guidance that we need, okay, to align our behaviors with our beliefs and values. And this is beginning with the end in mind. So what principles do you have? So practice success habit 2. Challenge yourself to test the principle of beginning with the end in mind by doing the following. 1. Visualize in rich detail your own funeral. Who's there? What are they saying about you, about how you lived your life, about the relationships you have? What do you want them to say? Think about how your priorities would change if you only had 30 more days to live. Start living by these priorities. Wow, guys, this is amazing stuff here. I'm like, wow. Okay, like, let's get into it. 2, break down different roles in your life, whether professional, personal, or community, and list 3 to 5 goals you want to achieve for each. 3, define what scares you. Public speaking, critical feedback after writing a book. Write down the worst case scenario for your biggest fear. Then visualize how you will handle this situation. Write down exactly how you'll handle it, okay? And so let's move on to habit 3. Put first things first. So focusing on what's important first to get you to that end goal and ignore other people's emergencies that are not real, okay? So we tend to do this a lot. We will have some work that we need to do, and then maybe somebody calls you and they have this emergency, but it's really not an emergency. It's just something they've created in their own life, and they think it's an emergency because they are reactive instead of proactive. And so they are now reacting, and they are causing you to now be reactive as well. So you have to learn to get out of that and cut yourself off from that and kind of turn your phone off. Maybe during your work hours, turn your phone off. You know, put your phone in airplane mode if you need to, put your messenger in airplane mode if you need to, and focus on what you need to focus on first so that you can get to that end goal that you want to have. So the challenge is not to manage your time, but to manage yourself. So one good thing that I have really been focusing on lately is focusing on the minutes. And then the hours take care of themselves. So sometimes you're like, okay, how many hours do I want to work today? 8 hours, you know, whatever it is. And I'm like, okay, I got all this stuff that I need to do. And it kind of stresses you out. So instead of doing that, just like, okay, let me just focus on this minute right now. And then the hours will take care of themselves. And then you don't get distracted as much because you're like, well, this very minute, I don't want to be distracted. I want to be focused on the work that I want to do. So here are like four quadrants, basically, of what he talks about. Urgent and important and not important. Urgent, not urgent, important, not important. So they kind of merge. So there's important and urgent. So quadrant one are activities, crisis, pressing problems, deadline driven projects. So this kind of thing, like, you don't always want to be in that quadrant. But you kind of have to deal with them in the moment and then move over to the quadrant that you want to be in. So, which is not urgent, but it's important to do, which is quadrant two. Activities like relationship building, recognizing new opportunities, and planning. So those are huge things. Like, that's personal, relationship building, recognizing new opportunities, things in your business, or relationship building can also be business related because you maybe are going to meet up, like, business relationships, and then planning. And so planning, you know, your business and planning out what you want to do for the future and the end goals that you want to have. So there's not important and urgent. So things like interruptions, like I was talking about, making calls, having meetings, and popular activities that you want to do. Not urgent and not important are things like trivial busy work, time wasting, and pleasant activities. So, YouTube. And, like, we all get into that habit sometimes, and we have to find ourselves out of that. I have, for the past, like, 2 weeks, not even been on YouTube, unless it's, like, something to do with business. We react to urgent matters. We spend our time doing things that are not important, and that means that we neglect quadrant two. So quadrant two is the most important quadrant we have. So we have to deal with quadrant one as fast as we can, but we can't always, if we spend our time in there, then it's going to lead to burnout and stress and constantly having to put out fires. So again, quadrant two is where you want to be, guys. It's at the heart of the effective personal management. It deals with things like building relationships, long-term planning, exercising, preparation, all things we know we need to do, but somehow seldom get around to actually doing it because they don't feel urgent, right? They're like, yeah, I'll work out tomorrow. You know, I don't need to do it today. We all have that, you know, it's a normal human thing to be, procrastinate. But I read a really good quote that said, you know, procrastination is all good until you get the bill. When you get the bill, it's not fun. So the key is to not prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities, guys. Okay. This is good stuff. Plus, when you focus on quadrant two, it means you're thinking ahead, working on the roots, and preventing crisis from happening in the first place. This helps us implement the Pareto principle. 80% of results come from 20% of your time. We should always maintain a primary focus on relationships and results and a secondary focus on time. One thing for me is like, okay, like if you go and get an oil change before your car, you know, is like at the very, very limit of it, you know, then you're not going to have this crisis one day and you're going to have to like, oh my God, like my car's messed up and now I need to go take it into the shop and, you know, a whole day is wasted instead of just going and doing it when you had the time. Think effectiveness with people and efficiency with things. So effectiveness with people and efficiency with things. So habit number three, we went over that. So things that you can do to practice it, identify what activity you've been neglecting, write it down and commit to implementing it. So guys, this is what I'm doing right now. I wrote it down. I want to film a podcast and I'm implementing it, guys. Okay. So create your own time management matrix to start prioritizing. Estimate how much time you spend in each quadrant and then log your time over 3 days. How accurate was your estimate? How much time did you spend in quadrant two, the most important quadrant? And this is a Saturday, guys. Like I'm taking time out of my personal to do you know, business stuff. So habit number four, think win-win, guys. Think win-win. So this is like really good and to establish interdependent relationships in business and in you know, your personal relationships. So he explains that there's six paradigms of human interaction. One, win-win. Both people win. Agreements or solutions are mutual, beneficial, and satisfying to both parties. Number two, win-lose. If I win, you lose. Win-lose people are prone to use position, power, credentials, and personality to get their way. So lose-win. I lose, you win. Lose-win people are quick to please and appease and seek strength from popularity or acceptance. Lose-lose are people, both people lose, basically. That's like the worst one. When two win-lose people get together, that is, when two determined, stubborn, ego-invested individuals interact, the result is a lose-lose. So don't get to that point. Number five is win. People with win mentalities don't necessarily want someone else to lose. That's irrelevant. What matters is that they get what they want. So win-win or no deal. If you can't reach an agreement that is mutually beneficial, there's no deal. So the best option is to create a win-win situation. With win-lose or lose-win, one person appears to get what he wants for the moment, but the result will never negatively impact the relationship with those two people. So like in sales, you know, you want to have a win-win. You know, you don't want to lie to your customer about what features or benefits that your product has, or just, you know, go glaze over them really quickly and say something, say the incorrect thing, and then that person loses and you win just because you wanted to make the sale. So you, like, again, then you go through the sales process and take them back to the beginning of why they want the product, what they're going to be using it for, all that good stuff. So here we have the table. We've got high consideration, low consideration, high courage, and low courage. So these things, again, they merge. So high consideration to high courage is a win-win. So you're considering the other person and you're having courage. And then high courage but low consideration for other people means you're winning and they're losing. Low courage, you're losing. Or I'm sorry, low courage and high consideration, you lose and they win because you're so considerate that you just will lose. And then low consideration, you're not even considering the other person and you have such low courage, you're not even trying basically at that point. So to go for win-win, you not only have to be nice, you have to be courageous. So you have to do whatever you need to do Not whatever you need to do. you have to be courageous. You have to ask the questions that seem uncomfortable. Like when I was first starting in sales and taking people back to the beginning of asking them why they want the product, I thought people would just know why they wanted it or what they were going to be using it for, you know? But they don't. They kind of sometimes jump to the end. They just see some product and they're like, oh, I want that. And then because they didn't actually go through the buying process, they didn't go through step one to figure out why they want it, what they're going to be using it for. Then they like have all these questions, that they have you want to have you answer. And instead of, you have to take them back to the beginning. So you got to be courageous to be like, okay, well, why do you want this? You know, do you have the budget for it? You know, those are uncomfortable conversations to have with a customer the first time. You say, like, what's your budget? You know, and then you can kind of figure out if they can even afford your product, right? Because we're in high-ticket drop shipping. We're selling expensive products. And if people are calling and they don't have the money to call, or they have bad credit and you have financing and they just don't, like, basically, they don't, I'm clicking my pen here. They don't have the money to purchase it or they have bad credit, then, you know, you're kind of, I don't want to say you're wasting your time. You know, you can get them in the future, but, you just have to ask them those questions so that they realize like, oh, you know what, this is probably not a good idea. And I'm just kind of hoping and wishing and praying, for this product. So, you have to ask those questions, take them back to the beginning. What are they going to use the product for? You know, that's a really good one with the products that are more like recreational. Practice that habit. Think about an incoming interaction. Upcoming interaction. You'll be attempting to reach an agreement or solution. Write down a list of what the other person is looking for. So I do that when I'm doing sales on my computer. I'm like, okay, well, what do you want? You know, if they have a question about a product, I'll say, okay, write it down. Every question they have, write that list down. And next, write a list of next to it of, sorry, next, write a list next to that of how you can make an offer to meet those needs. So yeah, we have that product. Identify three important relationships in your life. Okay, for when to get your start is to get yourself. So this is to start thinking about win-win challenges. Identify three important relationships in your life. Think about what you feel the balance is in each of those relationships. Do you give more than you take? Do you take more than you give? Write down 10 ways to always give more than you take with each one. Wow, that's really good, guys. This is like not just some business advice, but this is also really good personal advice. Number three, deeply consider your own interaction tendencies. Are they win-lose? You know? How does that affect your interaction with others? Can you identify the source of the approach? Determine whether or not this approach serves you well in your relationships and write it all down. Okay. All right. So habit number five, guys, we're almost to the end of the habits. Seek first to understand and then be understood. Okay. You've spent years of your life learning how to read and write, years learning how to speak, but what about listening? We're not that great at that. We can't simply use one technique to understand someone. In fact, if a person senses that we're manipulating them, they will question our motives and will no longer feel safe and open with us. You have to build the skills of empathetic listening on a base of character that inspires openness and trust. To listen empathetically, it requires a fundamental paradigm shift. We typically seek first to be understood. So we always want, oh, people just don't understand me. Most people listen with the intent to reply. And I do this all the time, you know, not to understand. At any given moment, they're either speaking or preparing to speak, you know. As soon as they say something, you automatically already have your answer. So, after all, Covey points out, communication experts estimate that 10% of our communication is represented by our words. 30% is represented by our sound. And 60% is represented by our body language. So when we listen autobiographically, I like that word, in other words, with our own perspective as our frame of reference. So we're listening from our perspective, you know, automatically. If someone says something, you know, you don't agree, you're like, oh no, like, that's not what I agree to. I don't think like that. We tend to respond in four ways. We, one, evaluate or disagree with what is said. Okay? That's immediately what we do. We probe. We ask questions for our own frame of reference. This is like a selfish kind of thing. We advise. We give counsel based on our own experience. Okay? We interpret. Try to figure out the other person's motives and behavior based on our own motives and behaviors. So basically, we're just like, you know, we're not even like in a conversation. We're kind of just in a conversation with ourselves. We're trying to listen. Two people are talking, but they're not really talking. They're not really communicating. And these are really good things, that good habits to develop over time. So seeking to understand requires consideration. Seeking to be understood takes courage. So a way you can practice this habit, number five. Okay, number five of how to empathetically listen, okay? You want to understand first, okay? So the next time you're watching two people communicate, cover your ears and watch. What emotions are being communicated that might not come across through words alone? Was one person on the other more interested in the conversation? Write down what you noticed. Next time, give a presentation, root it in empathy. Begin by describing the audience's point of view in great detail. What problems are facing? How is what you're about to say offering a solution to their problem? So if you're a speaker, but one way of empathetically listening is to repeat, rephrase, and reflect feeling, and rephrase and reflect. So you want to seek first to understand, then to be understood, guys. So you want to really listen and let that person finish completely what they're saying and really take it in what they're saying, and don't try to think up an answer immediately as soon as they start talking and already have what you're going to say and stick to that, you know. Really listen to what that person is saying. All right, guys, synergize is habit number six. Habit number six. Okay, so without a doubt, you have to leave the comfort zone of base camp and confront an entirely new and unknown wilderness. By understanding and valuing the differences in another person's perspective, you have the opportunity to create synergy, which allows us to uncover new possibilities through openness and creativity. The combination of all the other habits prepares us for habit six, which is the habit of synergy, or when 1 + 1 = 3, or more and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. For example, if you plant two plants close together, their roots will commingle and improve the quality of the soil, so that both plants will grow better than they would on their own. That's synergy. It allows us to create new alternatives and open new possibilities. It allows us to group to collectively agree to ditch the old scripts and write new ones. Really great stuff, you guys. So how can we introduce synergy to a given situation or environment? You know, how can we do this? Start with habits 4 and 5, which were, let's take it back, the win-win abundance, having integrity, saying what you mean, meaning what you say, and the abundance mentality. someone doesn't have to lose for you to win. And number 5, listening, empathetic listening, okay? So having that win-win mentality and empathetically listening creates synergy. You must think win-win and seek first to understand, okay? Once you have these in mind, you can pool your desires with those of the other person or group. And then you're not on opposite sides of the problem. You're together working on one side, looking at the problem, understanding all the needs, and working to create a third alternative that will meet them. But what we end up with is not a transaction, but a transformation. Both sides get what they want, and they build their relationship in the process. So you want to move up from the defensive win-lose or lose-win to the respectful compromise. Okay, now you're building trust and cooperation, and you're moving up to win-win synergy. By putting forth a spirit of trust and safety, we will prompt others to become extremely open and feed on each other's insights and ideas, creating synergy. The real essence of synergy is valuing the differences, the mental, emotional, and psychological difference between people. The key to valuing differences is to realize that all people see the world not as it is, but as they are. Okay? After all, if two people have the same opinion, one is unnecessary. When we become aware of someone's different perspective, we can say, good, you see it differently. Help me see what you see. We seek first to understand, and then we find strength and utility in those different perspectives in order to create new possibilities and win-win results. Synergy allows you to value the differences in other people as a way to expand your perspective. Sidestep negative energy and look for the good in others. Exercise courage in interdependent situations to open and encourage others to be open. Catalyze creativity and find a solution that will be better for everyone by looking for a third alternative. Okay? So, how to practice habit 6? Make a list of people who irritate you. Now choose just one person. How are their views different? Put yourself in their shoes for 1 minute. Think and pretend how it feels to be them. Does this help you understand them better? Now, next time you're in a disagreement with that person, try to understand their concern and why they disagree with you. The better you can understand them, the easier it will be to change their mind or change yours. Number 2, make a list of people whom you get along well. Now choose just one person. How are their views different? Write down a situation where you had excellent teamwork and synergy and why. What conditions were met to reach such fluidity in your interactions? How can you recreate those conditions again? Okay. And then you guys, we are down to habit number 7, sharpen the saw. Quick summary. To be effective, we must devote the time to renewing ourselves physically, spiritually, mentally, and socially. Continuous renewal allows us to synergistically increase our ability to practice each habit. Habit 7 is focused around renewal, or taking the time to sharpen the saw. It surrounds all other habits and makes each one possible by preserving and enhancing your greatest asset, yourself. So that's why I'm taking these weekends off, because I want to enhance myself, my greatest asset. I have to take the time off from work in order to sharpen my saw, or else I'm going to I'm not going to be a happy person. I'm going to be mean. I'm going to be short with people. I'm not going to be in a good mood, you know? I need to also make sure I feed myself. And like he said, physically, spiritually, mentally, and socially. So go out and see people, meet up with people, hang out mentally, meditate, get in a groove, you know, just walk in nature. Spiritually, that's kind of the same thing for me, is to go out into nature and just be in silence. And physically, working out, walking, you know, going and doing something, moving your body. Okay, so there are 4 dimensions of our nature, and we must be exercised regularly and balanced in each of them. The physical dimension. The goal of continuous physical improvement is to exercise our body in a way that will enhance our capacity to work, adapt, and enjoy. And this is why doctors, like if you ever watched Dr. 90210, I did, for this was like years ago when they had all these plastic surgery shows, but one of the things that really stuck out to me is that these guys like were doing kickboxing, and they were doing like really physical martial arts and boxing, and really learning at that skill. And that hard exercise really helped them to focus during these like 10-hour, 12-hour, 16-hour plastic surgery sessions. They had to be like in physical shape, the best physical shape of their lives, so that they could mentally, because when you physically train, you are mentally training your body, because your body, when you go work out in the gym, when you first start, your body does not want to do it. But over time, your body gets used to it, and your mind is like, okay, I kind of like this. You start to like it, and it helps you to stay focused. So in order to renew yourself physically, eat well, get sufficient rest and relaxation, exercise on a regular basis, and build endurance, flexibility, and strength. So develop habit one, muscles of proactivity. Okay, that's being proactive, is working out. We act based on the value of well-being instead of reacting to the forces that keep us from fitness. Okay. So then it's the spiritual dimension. We have the physical dimension, we have the spiritual. The goal of renewing our spiritual self is to provide leadership to our life and reinforce your commitment to your value system. To renew your spirituality, you can practice daily meditation. So I've been doing this in the mornings, 10-minute meditation, and writing down like what my goals are for the day, writing down like my feelings, my thoughts, like things that I want to accomplish, and communicate with nature. You know, go for a walk, get out there. It's so wonderful and it's so beautiful. Immerse yourself in great literature or music. You know, take time to, you know, listen to something that doesn't have to do with business, or, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you kind of like always want to be listening to audiobooks and things like that. But, you know, get into good literature and music to help your mind not like mentally explode from all the learning, you know. So focus on the spiritual dimension helps us practice habit two. And habit two was beginning with the end in mind. When you're not so focused on every day, the daily tasks and the busy work, you can begin with the end in mind, because you are taking yourself away, you're stepping away, and you're getting clarity. You're thinking about what you really want in life. As you continuously revise and commit yourself to your values, you can begin with the end in mind. So then it's the mental dimension. The goal of renewing our mental health is to continue expanding our mind. To renew yourself mentally, you can read good literature. Again, keep a journal of your thoughts, experiences, and insights. Limit television watching to only those programs that enrich your life. Okay, so not just like, things that are like, you know, things on YouTube that are just like mush. Watch things that are going to enrich your life. One thing that I really like is a Curiosity Stream. It's a really good one. It's like, it's all about science and history, and it's really, really cool because I love history and I love science. So focusing on the mental dimension helps you to do habit number three, which is focusing on the first things first. So when you do the mental, so you're managing yourself effectively to minimize the use of your time and your resources. So, like I said, doing the important things first. So if you're doing things that enrich your life, you're going to be thinking about the important things first. So the social and emotional dimension, okay? The goal of renewing ourselves socially is to develop meaningful relationships, to renew yourself emotionally. You can seek to deeply understand other people, okay? Maintain contributions to meaningful projects that improve the lives of others. So, like, for me personally, I really love animals. Like, it's, like, something that I'm super passionate about. You know, if I follow some people, like, some people in Bali that rescue dogs and stuff, and I will contribute to those causes when, you know, when I see things, like, I'll contribute. If she's like, oh, I need help, you know, with rescuing these dogs. I mean, it's something that's meaningful to me. I really like that. This could be like going and, you know, going and, what's the word? Getting tired here at the end. I'm good. Volunteering at a soup kitchen. Those are really, really, like, those things kind of mean something to me. So find what it is about you that's meaningful to you in your life that improves the lives of others. Because that really brings you, it really makes you happy to know that you're doing things that help other people. Maintain a abundance mentality and seek to help others find success. Renewing our social and emotional dimensions helps us practice 4 and 5, which is the win-win abundance mindset. And the number 5, which is the empathetic listening. Okay, so practice your social and emotional dimension and you will focus on the win-win and the empathetic listening. And number 6 as well, which is synergy, okay? So you're sharpening the saw, and that really goes and helps you to do all the other habits as well. Recognizing the win-win solutions do exist, seeking to understand others, and finding mutual beneficial third alternatives through synergy, guys. So not a day goes by that we can't at least serve one human being by making deposits of unconditional love. This is what Stephen Covey says. Really great quote. The more we see people in terms of their unseen potential, the more we can use our imagination rather than our memory. So to practice step number 7, make a list of activities that would help renew yourself along with each of the 4 dimensions, which were the 4 things I just talked about: physical, spiritual, mental, and social emotional. Select one activity for each dimension and list it as a goal for the next coming week. At the end of the week, evaluate your performance, what led you to succeed or fail. Commit to writing down a specific sharpening the saw activity for all 4 dimensions each week, to do them and to evaluate performance and results. You guys, I highly suggest you read that book. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Be effective in your life. Be effective in your personal relationships and your business relationships, in your business, and things that mean something to you. All right, guys. Well, if you want, more information on what we do, go check out ecommerceparadise.com, and you can check out the masterclass there. Thank you guys for listening. Go out there and be highly effective people in your business and your life. Take care. Thanks for listening.